Hello there, welcome back. Today we have a bit of a challenge in chapter 26 of the Lotus Sutra. So before we get into it, let's do Dhammoku Sancho together, okay? Namu Myo Ho Renge Kyo Namu Myo Ho Renge Kyo namu Myo Ho Renge Kyo namu. So, if it hasn't been apparent so far, it should be by now, but assuming maybe you just popped into this video first. The Lotus Sutra and modern scholars, and I don't mean last week, but modern in the sense of the last few centuries, have really investigated this Lotus Sutra, this threefold Lotus Sutra, because it includes the innumerable meanings as well as the closing sutra. Have really, really investigated the origins of the writings of this, what shall we say, ultimate compendium of teaching. See, the Lotus is kind of a capstone because without studying all the previous Mahayana and early teachings, all of the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, including all of the scholarship and latter elucidations, you really can't grasp the totality of what the Lotus Sutra is saying, because a lot of what is in the sermon of the Lotus Sutra is depended upon and assumed a knowledge base, that knowledge base being the previous sutras. So if you just read the Lotus Sutra cold, and this is my biggest admonition against those groups out there who in all practices inside and outside of Buddhism, Buddhist and non-Buddhist, that that admonish their students to not Don't read anybody else's. Don't read any other. This is the only thing you should read. All the answers are here. That is, first of all, that's not Buddhism. Second of all, that's explicitly I won't say forbidden, but specifically exhorted in several sutras by Shakyamuni himself, saying, study broadly, study all of Buddhist scholarship, as well as non-Buddhist scholarship, okay? Because he knew, and he said it himself, you shouldn't be following the words, you shouldn't be following me. You should be following your determined, strong mind, looking for answers and what makes sense and reason to you. This is part of the reason he talks a lot about innumerable meaning, that every individual is going to have their own specific path to perceive the one truth. The one truth is the one truth, but there are incalculable ways of coming to it. And if all you do in trying with good heart, to help others practice, if all you do is hammer them your way of understanding without allowing for them to interpret and move around it in their own needed way to break down their delusions and come to the same truth, then you're doing them a profound disfavor, okay? So in light of that, the Lotus Sutra, it has a very cohesive structure for much of the sutra, but not all of it. And so some of the chapters and or facils that have been included by everyone from Kumbhanajiva to Chinese scholars whose names I just can't seem to remember, Chinese names for some reason, karma. And all the way through China and a great deal of scholarship in China and into Japan, some of these facils were taken at the time, and we're talking about from BC into AD, that time period, thousands of years ago. There were some chapters that seemed dubious in specific origin, and yet traditionally kept with this compendium called Saddharma Pundarika Sutra, the Myoho Renge Kyo, the Lotus Sutra teaching. All right? And so much so that they kept the chapter headings with that name of the title of the whole compendium. So it's like opening a file cabinet that says Myoho Renge Kyo, and inside of it there's all these chapters that are of Myoho Renge Kyo, expedient means and lifetime of Tathagata. They're all Myoho Renge Kyo. Okay, so why all of this elaboration? Because we're about to read chapter 26, which is translated as Dharani, magical spells, incantations. When I first read this in my first year of study, this chapter threw me. I thought, oh no. After all of this stuff that's making sense, suddenly, am I part of a cult? Did I dive into the wrong thing? It very much upset me because so much to that point made such incredible sense. I mean, look at chapters 10 through 22. Okay, which most modern scholarship now says is a very specific, very well constructed, and what's the word I'm looking for? It's very a logical structure to the Lotus Sutra, because it takes you from beginning to end on what is Bodhisattva practice, what does it look like, how do you practice it. What is the personal practice? What is the behavior in society? What are the benefits of it? What can you, so on and so forth. I mean, it's very structured, very ordered, and makes so much sense. It's very logical. And the first 10 chapters also have a structure. Okay? And it's obvious that the mission of that structure is about how Buddhist teaching is taught, and how to inculcate all of Buddhist teaching and commentary into this lens that we're now going to dive into from chapter 10 on, of how to use all of this information in order to realize our absolute ultimate practice of Buddhism in the Bodhisattva way. So the structure is still there from first part to second part, and the third part, and this is the modern elucidation, which has been around hundreds of years, is that in old tradition, the Lotus Sutra was divided in half, the provisional and the essential. All right. And that chapter 14 was like the middle way between the two, the middle divider between the provisional first part and the essential second part. But modern scholarship says, okay, you can do that, but really, when you really take apart the sutra, its origins, the way it's structured, the way it teaches, there's obviously three parts. Okay. And I very much subscribe to that. And it's actually helped me tremendously to understand the teachings so much better. Because now in chapter 26, we're going to read something that sounds completely non-Buddhist. But if you understand that throughout Mahayana teachings, Shakyamuni is abundantly clear with the early text sects the people who started and arrogantly stood on the Buddha was alive at this time, and these people, these sects, decided this is all we need. You don't need to tell us anymore. We got it from here. It's so incredibly arrogant. But you know, that's human nature. That's what we do. So it still exists. And once again, I will point out to those groups out there that tend to follow an individual, follow a person, and follow a specific book or teaching within a confine, you're not practicing Buddhism. Buddha himself said, don't follow me. Don't follow the words. Don't look at the finger. Look at the moon. Look for the meaning. So scholarship is where the answer is, because scholarship is your opportunity to decipher your own mind and its incalculable, innumerable ways that are specific to you, for you to penetrate and embrace the truth as you know it. It's the same truth, but it's as you, your samsaric filters, will know it. All right, so then chapter 26, in light of that conversation, becomes a facile written specifically for those people who are still stuck on the fence, specifically for those people who want to say, well, we've got this, and we're practicing Buddhism. We're not sure about this Bodhisattva way yet. So now if you go into chapter 26 with that thought in mind, then you can see again, and I have to remind myself as much as you guys, this, the whole methodology of these teachings is skillful means. It's a way to awaken minds that have specific obstacles to awaken in other ways. So something else that appeared to me as I was first getting into my first few years of study of many sutras and commentaries and so forth, was that there's very much a sense of, oh, he's saying this again, but from a different perspective. This story, this parable, yeah, I get it. You've said this before in this parable, in this simile, in this book, in this sutra, in this sermon. But saying it in a different way connects with different minds, different people, innumerable pathways. Follow? So if you read chapter 26 with this in mind, you will see a very compassionate effort from the Bodhisattva way to express compassion and offer tools to those who, even stuck in their own perception, if given tools, will at some point aspire to the way, even though they may not understand that yet. And isn't that a true gift of teaching? An elucidation of teaching, a profoundly aware teaching. My child doesn't know yet that vegetables are good for her. So I will present some vegetables that are very sweet tasting and fun to eat as sweets, or as little desserts within the meal, and take the auspices of vegetation away from them so that they might enjoy eating them and discover later, as they get more mature, that those two are vegetables, right? It's interesting. And so with that, in this book, this chapter is called Incantations. Now, in the old translation, H. Kern stayed with the Sanskrit or Indian word, which will be familiar to early teachings practicants, Dharani. And we've heard Dharani before. Dharani, there are four kinds of spells. Okay, there are spells, let's see if that's even put in here. Yeah, I don't see footnotes in here. Let me, I just saw this recently. I think I saw it in this translation. The four kinds of Dharani is basically there for protections and for, oops, too far. Well, I'll leave that for you to look up. I'm wasting too much time. But Dharani, this was basically the Dharani were heartfelt exhortations to either protect people who practice or to open gateways of understanding, so on and so forth. So there were four kinds. I apologize, I can't remember them off the top of my head. At that time, medicine king Bodhisattva. So now, this is right away the first clue. The chapter starts with, at that time, medicine king Bodhisattva rose from his seat, bared his right shoulder, put his palms together facing the Buddha, and said to him, "World honored one, if there are good sons or daughters who can embrace the Myoho Renge Kyo, read and recite it, gain insight into it, or copy it into a scroll, how many blessings will they obtain?" Now this is, remember I explained this in the last chapter, medicine king Bodhisattva is, although he's a Bodhisattva in characterization, his medicine king past shows him to be previously a Hinayanist, an early teachings Buddhist, who is coming to grips with the Bodhisattva way. Remember, he's the one who burned his body, burned his arms, all of that stuff. And what we found out is right after telling all of these stories about how he used to be, he didn't need to do any of that, that all he had to do was embrace this sutra, recite it, copy it, get others to recite it, boom, he achieves the Bodhisattva way to accomplish his ultimate awakening as a Buddha, right? That's his advice to all of us, and that's the example of that story of the Medicine King. So Medicine King now, with this, knowing this, is saying, okay, so we do all of that. What do we get out of it? What does that look like? Well, he's still struggling with it, right? So the Buddha responds to Medicine King, "Suppose good sons or good daughters make offerings to Buddhas equal in number to the sands of 8 million billion myriads of Ganges. In your opinion, will their blessings be great or not?" So now he's appealing to the basic understanding that Medicine King has of the Buddhist teachings from the start, right? And so Medicine King says, well, with all those offerings, like he burned his body, I mean, he's all into offerings, right? Very great world-honored one, right? That he gets. The Buddha continued, "If any good son or daughters are able to embrace even a single four-line verse of this sutra, read and recite it, understand the meaning of it, and do so, as it says, their blessings will be very great." Then Medicine King Bodhisattva said to Buddha, because, okay, this is the part I'm struggling with now, "World-honored one, I will now make an incantation for the preachers of the Dharma. It will protect them." Then he made the following incantation. So he's trying to be good, right? And he's saying to Shakyamuni, all right, you tell me that it just takes a four-line stanza for me to read and recite so on of this sutra. I'm going to show you how much confidence I have. I'm going to make a magic spell that's going to protect all of the preachers, which includes you, by the way. And he spouts out this dharani, this magic spell. Well, it's not the spell that's important. And this is what I want to impress on all of you. There are translations in here in Sanskrit, in Pinyin, if you know Chinese. But it's not important. Again, see, even this sutra, even this translation here, they cater too much to the words. It's not about the words. Think about the meaning. What does it mean for him to make this incantation to protect the preachers? He's making a tremendous cause. He's making a cause that says, okay, I want to believe you. I want to honor this Dharma, this sutra. And I will do it in my own perception by putting a spell on all those who teach it to protect them. See, he's still thinking from his Hinayana perspective, but he's trying. He's trying really hard to be a bodhisattva, right? That's his way. World-honored one, these sacred incantations have been made by Buddhas as numerous as the sands over 6 billion Ganges rivers. If anyone does violence to these Dharma teachers, they will have done violence to those Buddhas. Now, since when has violence been a part of Buddhist teachings? See, this is the corruption of early teaching sects who stopped growing. Death will get me to Buddhahood. Violence will protect Buddha. No. But if you understand what we're talking about, what's being discussed in this chapter, you can get it. But if you don't, coming upon this chapter is like, what happened? That's not what I've been reading, right? It can be very disconcerting. So I want to take time on this to really encourage you to understand that this is just another facile thrown in for a specific group to wrestle with their obstacles of truly understanding this Dharma teaching. He still doesn't really get it. But we can, being observers, we can see, oh, poor child, doesn't understand yet, right? Because we have distance. Then Shakyamuni Buddha praised Medicine King Bodhisattva, saying, good, good, Medicine King, because you are compassionate and protect these Dharma teachers, you have made these incantations. They will bring abundant benefits to the living. He's not addressing the violence thing. He just wanted to give him praise to keep him going the right direction. You see? Like a parent. Then courageous giver Bodhisattva, another Bodhisattva, said to the Buddha, world honored one, for the protection of those who read, recite, and embrace the Myoho Renge Kyo, I too will make incantations. Oh, okay. Little brother's going to stand up and say, I'm just as good as big brother. If these Dharma teachers have these incantations, neither satyrs, nor ogres, nor incubi, nor succubi, nor kumbandas, nor hungry spirits, nor others spying out their shortcomings will have a chance. So this guy's thinking a little more spiritually, and he's thinking all those obstacles that come up in the mind that derail us are running our Sanchoshima, right? Those things that derail our practice. So he wants to protect the teachers against that. So he comes up with his own incantation. World honored one, these sacred incantations have been made by Buddhas as numerous as the sands of the Ganges, and all of them responded with joy. If anyone does violence to these Dharma teachings, they will have done violence to those Buddhas. Then the King of Heaven, Vaishravana, protector of the world, said to Sorry. The Buddha, world honored one, I too, out of compassion for the living and for the protection of these Dharma teachers, will make these incantations. Then he made the following incantations, blah, 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 blah. World honored one, with these sacred incantations, I will protect the Dharma teachers. What's more, I myself will protect those who embrace this sutra, so that within 100 leagues, no weakness or illness will come upon them. Well, that's a little more, I like the flavor of that incantation. That is really a desire, a self-expressed desire, right? So if we look at them as not so much magic words, but as a very benevolent intent, well, that's a great cause. So this is why the Buddha says, this is good, this is good, you're coming along, right? World honored one, with these sacred incantations I will protect, blah, blah, blah. Then the King of Heaven, Realm Upholder, who was in the congregation with a multitude of tens of millions of billions of myriads of centaurs surrounding him, reverently went before the Buddha and, putting his palms together, said to him, World honored one, I too, with sacred incantations, will protect those who embrace the Dharma Flower Sutra, the Myoho Renge Kyo. Then he made the following incantation, blah, 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 blah. World honored one, with these sacred incantations have been made by over 4 billion Buddhas. Anyone who does violence to these Dharma teachers will have done violence to those Buddhas. At this time, some ogresses were there. Ogresses. Why ogresses? The other sutras don't, translations don't call them ogres. Ogres. They just say lay women, lay practicants, nuns, women, in other words. But because they're defiled, dirty women who aren't practicing the Lotus Sutra Bodhisattva way yet, or aren't capable of it, let's call them ogresses, right? The first name Lamba, the second name Vilamba, the third name Crooked Teeth, the fourth name Flowery Teeth, the fifth name Black Teeth, the sixth name Much Hair, the seventh name Insatiable. Oh no. Sex again. The eighth name, Necklace Holder. The ninth name, Kunti. Kunti. Oh my goodness. And the tenth name, Snatcher of the Spirits of All the Living. Oh, those women. These 10 ogresses, together with Mother of Demon Children, with her children and followers, all went to the Buddha, and in one voice said to him, World honored one, we too would protect those who read and recite, receive and embrace this Myoho Renge Kyo, so that no weakness or illness will come upon them. If anyone attempts to spy out the shortcomings of these Dharma teachers, we will prevent them from having any chance. Then, in the presence of the Buddha, they made the following incantations themselves. So now we know it's not the words, the incantation, it's their profound desire to follow the will of the Dharma, to become good bodhisattvas. And they're expressing it in their way, albeit maybe a little misguided. At very least, they're getting over the hump. No pun intended, ogresses. But that was terrible. I didn't try to do that at all. But what's important here is that no matter what your life condition, no matter how stunted or obstacle-driven your practice might be, even if you're a Buddhist practicing and you're having a hard time dealing with the Lotus Sutra or Myoho Renge Kyo or chanting or getting a Gohonzon and chanting to Gohonzon, if you're having doubts, if you're having obstacles, this chapter is about you. It says, look, just be determined. Make your determination. Make your strong mind. That's what these people are doing. And there's nothing more powerful than that. So this is your chapter. And all of us fall into that category from time to time. All of us. Don't think this is specific to a type of person. This is specific to a type of mental delusion, of samsaric human mind. We all share it. Some of us more than others, depending on the time and the circumstances that we're dealing with. So now this chapter becomes very enlightening, very useful, right? Because it's not about magic spells. It's about whatever it takes for you to get determined, to build your strength of mind. Now that, That's amazing. That has some value. Now I can see why they included this in the Lotus Sutra. It makes sense. And I'm going to take my deluded mind and plug in the computer. The screen just went dim. Okay, we're back. Let troubles fall on our heads rather than on the Dharma teacher. Neither satyrs, nor ogres, nor hungry spirits, nor incubi, nor succubi, nor vampires, nor ghouls, nor lamias, nor convulsives, nor satyr succubi, nor human succubi, nor fevers, whether the fever is for a single day or two, three, four, or even 7 days, or unremitting, whether they are in the form of male or female or boy or girl, even in dreams, they will never cause them any trouble. Then, before the Buddha, they spoke in verse, if anyone resists our incantations and makes trouble for a Dharma teacher, their heads will split into seven pieces like the branches of a basil tree. Their crime will be like that of someone who kills their father and mother, or someone who commits the offense of pressing oil, or someone who cheats with measures and scales, or someone who, like Devadatta, tries to divide the monks. Anyone who offends these Dharma teachers will have committed this kind of offense. So, this is a very, very big determination. And interesting that it's from the females that we get this kind of embrace and embracing protection, right? It's very feminine. After the ogresses had spoken these verses, they said to Buddha, world-honored one with our bodies, we ourselves will protect those who receive and embrace, read and recite, and practice this sutra. We will give them peace and comfort, free them from weakness or illness, and quell the effects of poisonous plants. The Buddha said to the ogresses, good, good, if you can protect those who receive and keep even the name of the Myoho Renge Kyo, your blessings will be immeasurable. How much more so if you protect those who receive and embrace the whole sutra and make offerings to the sutra rolls with flowers, incense, garlands, powdered incense, incense for burning, banners, canopies, music, burning various kinds of lamps, clarified butter lamps, oil lamps, lamps of various fragrant oils. We've heard this, blah, 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 blah. With hundreds of thousands of kinds of offerings like these, Kunti, you and your followers should protect such Dharma teachers as these. When this chapter of incantations was taught, 68,000 people accepted the non-arising of all things. Right back to center, the non-arising of all things. This is the key to all of Buddhist practice, the non-arising of all things. Our human mind, our samsaric mind, is completely obsessed, and in fact, a creation of arising. Samsara is an arisen thing. The mind is an arisen thing. All things that arise, we know this from word one. Take heed, Theravadins. Take heed, early practicing Buddhist sects. In reality, anything that arises slips away. Everything is ephemeral. So we keep coming back to that. The issue isn't the core teaching of Buddhism. The issue is how to practice it. We can attain this enlightenment right now. We don't have to wait for death. We don't have to wait for multiple lifetimes. That's all part of the delusions, the arising samsaric mind. But it's hard, especially in our era, to let go of all of the thingness. Oh my goodness, we have so much thingness now. It's incalculable, immeasurable. It's all ephemeral. It's all created and therefore not real, not permanent, not extant in and of itself, not even this universe. It's all temporary. It arises. It goes through a phase of experience as it dissipates back into nothing, not potential. I heard a comedian once talk about probably shouldn't do this, but it was pretty funny, and it works as an example here. He was talking about McDonald's, and he wasn't a big fan of McDonald's. And he was saying that McDonald's, you know, everything you get there tastes the same. Well, we can debate all of that, but anyway, he's a comedian. And he was saying, he was creating this mental picture for people that there's a front line with a counter that separates you with human beings, soon to be robots or computers, from what goes on in the cooking line, the preparation line, right? And so his visualization of the preparation line was basically that there was one big, huge vat of McD's stuff, McDonald's potion or goop. And no matter what you ordered, from apple turnover to Big Mac to double cheeseburger to whatever it is they're selling, McNuggets, fries, the chefs in the back would take a scoop, scoop it up, and say, okay, double cheeseburger, apple pie, McNuggets, French fries. Like it was all just this big goop, and it came out looking like something different. And all the customers would just merrily go off to their seat or wherever and just chow down on this stuff. My analogy was people chow. Like dog and cat food. Anyway, so that was my analogy. This chapter, please don't let it stumble you or shake your understanding of the Bodhisattva way. Instead, see it as an afternote after that central portion of the Lotus Sutra to come back and try to gather up people that might be shaken by this intensity of this central theme of the Lotus Sutra of the Bodhisattva way. There may be people in that audience in your future or you yourself who will look at the largesse of that. And whether at first you go, wow, that's cool. And 2-3 years later you go, man, that's like overwhelming. You know, when your confidence gets shaken. Or if you're in a place where you first heard it and you go, I'll never get to that. Whatever it is, whatever's shaking your confidence, whatever making you think, I don't think I can do this. This chapter is talking to you. Find within your own world of understanding a way to honor this teaching, because this teaching is worthy of honor. Find a way to engage this teaching with respect, with reverence, and just keep practicing with that attitude, 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 attitude. You know, if you're so mentally gifted that everything you read about this makes, oh yes, I understand, I understand, now I'm going to go chant now, and I'm going to be able to get killed. And you just sort of go through the motions of doing it. You're actually more of an obstacle to your practice than the person who reads it and goes, I don't understand, but you know what? I really feel strongly that the answer is here. And goes to Gohanzen and goes, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. I want to get Buddhahood. I want to understand what this is. That person has infinitely more potential to awaken than the lazy intellectual. I mean, I'm not making this up. You can, if you go back and reread sutras, you will see those parables. I'm just trying to condense it down so it makes sense to our modern minds. So stay with me. Let's be Buddha. Let's be Myo. And manifest it here in Samsara, Ho. Like the magnificent, spontaneous beauty of a lotus flower blooming and spawning seed at the exact same moment from within this defiled reality that preoccupies our daily minds. Renge. It's in this teaching. Kyo. With that, Daimoku Sancho, thank you once again for being a part of this journey. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Namu. Thank you so much. Next, chapter 27.